just another solid day in California. It's just the way that I was raised in California.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living grid locked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got bunnies.
Welcome to this edition of the Fansmanship.com podcast. I'm Owen Main, your host. And on today's podcast, I sat down with Cal Poly head football coach Tim Walsh. Cal Poly went 1-10 a year ago. And we talked a little about some of the things that happened last season. Talked a lot about what's kind of happening this season. Talked a lot about things like mindset and other items that are interesting to me as Cal Poly tries to bounce back. Just 2 years ago, the Mustangs were hosting a FCS playoff game, one that they actually lost, and it was a super muddy one for those who were there. Since then, Cal Poly, like I said, went 1-10 last year. They got outscored the last two games of the season, something like 90-something to 14, and certainly fans are going to be keeping an early eye out on what this team has in store for 2018. The season starts off with probably the toughest game that you could play in the FCS at North Dakota State. The schedule this year is probably more difficult than the schedule was last year, with both Montana schools and Eastern Washington back on the schedule as well. So it should be an interesting one. Certainly the loss of Joe Prothrow and Khalil Jenkins last season played a big role in Cal Poly's slide, I guess, their 1-10 record. But that wasn't all. And from talking with Coach Walsh and other people around the program, it's pretty clear that they believe there's a mentality shift that needs to happen as well. I don't want to say that they thought the team was softer last year than it has been in years past, but that's kind of the feeling that I get. And this season, they're really trying to do some things to make sure that that toughness and that that's been a hallmark of Cal Poly, both, you know, offensively and defensively, is something that they get back, and also that they don't turn the ball over, because that was also a big part of some games getting away from Cal Poly very quickly last season. So ball security, toughness, kind of some of the intangible grit stuff. It's really going to be interesting to see if the Mustangs actually can kind of make some strides in those areas, and if those strides kind of become tangible in terms of wins. It's easy to kind of talk about those things when you are winning, but when you're losing, those things don't sound quite as easy to kind of swallow in terms of, toughness, grit, and really kind of making sure that you're accepting what your identity is. And Cal Poly's identity is a triple option team. Their identity is a, grind it out, be happy with 3 or 4 yards, and go on to the next play on offense. And their identity on defense, I think, is ever evolving. So you can hear what Tim has to say. He's always been gracious to sit down and answer questions. I asked him a lot about things like whether he was feeling more pressure this year than other seasons. We also talked a little bit about the climate on campus at Cal Poly and some other interesting topics. So I hope you enjoy our conversation. It's Tim Walsh on the Fansmanship.com podcast. Last year ends, and you guys win the game that you won last year. And I think the last two games was something pretty intense. I'm trying to think of what the total scores were from those two, but it was some 90-something to 21, or not, in terms of combined scores from those games. What do you do when a season like that ends, and where's your head out when you finish a season 1-10?
Well, I think overall you have to look, you have to go back and evaluate what happened and why things happened and things like that. But I think the first thing you have to do is you better take ownership of it. You better own the season. I mean, it's really easy to own things when things are going really well. It's pretty difficult to own things when they're not going so well. And in retrospect, last year, for 9 weeks, we could have won a lot of those games. The last 2 weeks, not so much, but those 9 weeks against some pretty good football teams, Southern Utah, Weber State, and we were in those games. We didn't play extremely well, but and then there's other games we let get away from us, Idaho State, UC Davis. There are some games that would have, could have, should have, too. So I think all those things might have changed the complexion, but I think in reality, I think the relief kind of set in with the older players that we had won a game and they weren't going to lose them all. And I think that our intent, I mean, we still practiced okay. I wasn't disappointed in our practice, but you could, our intensity wasn't there, especially the very last game. And this is an intense game. When you don't play with great intensity, you're not going to play well, and you're not going to probably beat some of the teams we have to play against. So you got to take ownership of it. You have to reevaluate why things happened. Yeah, injuries were an issue, but you can't look at the injuries as part of the game, and that's a fact. And when you take ownership of something, you own all, you know, we own the entire team. And the team owns it. And regardless if you're the first, second, or third on the depth chart, if you get an opportunity to play, your job is to help us win. And I think guys played extremely hard, but we didn't play well enough to win some games that woulda, coulda, shoulda. And I think it wore on us as the season wore on, emotionally and physically, to where we just kind of fell apart the last 2 weeks.
I mean, not to discount the importance of two guys in Khalil Jenkins and Joe Prothro, two really important guys to what you guys do and kind of affect things on both sides of the ball in some ways. But what kind of introspection has happened maybe beyond just like what, you know, what the end result was, or, you know, like what were you guys, you know, kind of looking at the end of the season? Is it something where you have to take some time away for a minute, or was it just like hitting it hard right away? Like what kind of, I don't know, program wise, just like what kind of things do you think about or?
Well, I wish that you could hit it hard right away, but the reality of the situation is two things.
Right.
Is recruiting starts for coaches. So you get ready to go, you have to get that organized, and you have to get ready to get on the road so you can go find better, you know, players that can help us win some of those games maybe that we lost. So I think that's a part of it, is you have to look and evaluate where you were, and we did that as the season progressed too, where we are positionally and depth-wise and things like that, and what we needed to do in order to try to enhance our opportunities to win. I think that's good, but I think, you know, again, in retrospect, I think, you know, one of the things we can't lose is our identity, and I think our identity got definitely tarnished. And I'm not talking about what we do, it's how we've done things in the past. I think that we played harder than our opponents. We're not the most athletic team in the Big Sky. I mean, even when we won it, we weren't. Right. But our guys found ways to win game because of who they were. So we got to get back to understanding who we are and believing that the who can win some football games rather than what we are. You know, you can run 4-3 and you can bench this much and you can do all those great things that have numbers to attach to them, but I think the one thing you can't lose is your toughness in this game. And I don't think we played tough on either side of the ball, to be honest with you, last year.
Think you lost some toughness and grittiness last year?
Yeah, and I think that's something that probably needs to be reestablished. And it's tough to do because this day and age, you're trying to really make sure you guard your players a little bit from the physical parts of the game on a daily basis. So, you know, we have to find ways to do it. And one of them is just being honest and having great conversations with our players about who we've been and what we aspire to be again. And hopefully we can get ourselves back on the right track by doing that. But I think that, yes, after the season, I mean, you got to get into recruiting and you got to look at what happened and where we had some deficiencies and try to improve them in recruiting. But then as soon as recruiting's over, you better get to work on the actual X and O's and figuring out how we can get better from a schematic standpoint as well.
Sure. You mentioned kind of trying to get it back, and sometimes some things are hard to get back once you've lost them, and boomeranging in general is kind of a hard thing to do. 2 years ago, you guys are 7-4 in the regular season, plus a playoff berth. Of course, that playoff game against San Diego, you guys lost here in the mud. Going to 1-10 last year, how do you kind of reconcile that, or how do you get that back? What are the things that you guys need to do, like, you know, program-wise to get that back from your perspective?
Well, I think attitudinally and leadership-wise, we're working on some things we're going to do, you know, from that standpoint, from making sure that we understand that week to week, this year's schedule is tougher than last year's schedule, to be honest with you. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we have our work cut out for us in every way, but to understand that week in and week out, you're going to have to be at your best, how we practice, how we take care of the football. There's a lot of little things that hurt us last year. Just taking care of the football when I won some games. And those were things when we were really good, we were really good with the football. And that includes, you know, passes not caught, that includes balls that were fumbled, that includes defensively having opportunities to make plays and not making the play. All those things come into, you know, thoughts when I think about last season. But
the number one thing is, I think, you know, when your confidence gets shaken, I think you start to have negative thoughts. And we have to get rid of negative thoughts as coaches, as players.
Right, those can last season to season, yeah, too, if you're not careful.
We have to be positive, and we have to move forward and start to regain our confidence through positive techniques, both on the field and off the field, making sure that we understand that there's going to be constructive criticism, but we don't want to make criticism destructive either. You know, so I think, you know, trying to be as constructive as we can and try to get our players to understand that it's a team game and not one individual can win this game. And making sure that on a daily basis, we compete with each other to make each other better, especially these first two or three weeks.
Going outside of football, obviously, you know, it was a kind of a tough last, I don't know, month of the last season. Talk about recruiting. I mean, there's not really a big break for any of you guys. Mm-hmm. Did you do anything fun over the summer? Like, was there anything that maybe got you away from football for a little bit over the summer? Or kind of what does that look like for a football coach?
For me, from a, you know, just a selfish standpoint, maybe hopefully for our coaches as well, is that, you know, with youth sports and all the things that you do as a family, as your kids are growing up, there's not a lot of time for family vacations. I mean, we hadn't been together with our family as a whole, other than a funeral or a wedding, for a long time. And what we did this year is we rented a place in Lake Tahoe, and all my kids came. My oldest son and his fiance, my youngest, my daughter with our granddaughter and her husband, and then my two middle guys. And we went away for a week, and we had an absolute blast doing things up in Lake Tahoe. So that was fun. It was relaxing, and it's something we hadn't done for a while, so I'm glad had the opportunity to do it. But I do think, especially the younger coaches, they have to take as much opportunity as they can to be with their families. And that's my number one thing, is in the summer, yep, we have things we got to do to prepare for August 3rd, but there's also things you got to do to clear your head and refresh yourself to make sure that we start football tomorrow, that our guys had the opportunity to refresh, to be with their families and to enjoy each other and things like that. So I try to put a huge emphasis on that, but everybody does it a different way.
Yeah. Camp, of course, starts, I guess it kind of started today, but starts tomorrow, right? In terms of like the on-field stuff. One of your assistant coaches getting a little bit famous, Mr. Thompson there, and his family. Yeah. They're doing some good things over there. Have you been paying a lot of attention to the Helmets for Helmets thing?
That's a great deal. I mean, if you look with their youngest, the second youngest, Bryson has been through, and the things that they've been able to do with him and put him in situations, again, you know, we talk about positive situations, dealing with something that's not a pretty negative thing. I think it's allowed him and I allowed them as a family to grow stronger together. Having the opportunity to create some national attention, I mean, to have the opportunity to be around somebody like Kobe Bryant, I'm not sure who had more fun, you know, Brock Bryson or AT, but you know, that was an incredible experience that they had, and an incredible thing that Kobe Bryant did for him. So all the things that they've done nationally, I think he's gotten some great attention for it, and deservedly so. They've been through a lot, but I also think that they have their priorities right as a family.
Sure.
And family is first, and I truly do believe that. And that helmet to helmet thing is a great cause for their family, as well as for others out there that are going through something like they are.
Yeah. Kind of shifting gears back to school here, a lot's happened over the past year or two on campus, maybe outside of football, politically on campus, other things. Have things about your job changed? Maybe how you communicate with coaches or athletes or recruiting? Like, has any of that changed the tone or timbre or anything about conversations that you have with your guys or with guys that you're trying to get to come here?
Well, there's 100, you know, 100, now we can have 110. So you have 110 guys on your team that come from all different backgrounds. And those backgrounds are not just ethnic or financial or social, they're also political. You know, so I learned this a long time ago that it's, you know, whatever my political beliefs are my political beliefs. They're not something I want to broadcast or try to do anything that would influence another person's opportunity to think freely, because that's what we're supposed to do in this country. So I do think you have to be conscious of it, but I don't think I've spent a lot of time in my 41 years talking politics with my players. Although I will say this, our players talk politics with each other. And that was even 5-6 years ago. I remember Cole Stanford and Gabe Umo having a political conversation on the road. We're going to play Weber State, and it was pretty intellectual to hear what they were talking about. And they did it in a good way, but, you know, one guy thought one thing, the other guy thought the other thing, but they were best friends for life, you know, and that's really what we're supposed to be in this country, is be able to respect each other's political beliefs, and still that doesn't mean we don't love each other or care for each other, it just means we have to be respectful to each other. And so I do think it's changed in that kid. I think young people are a lot more in tune to what's going on in the world and what's going on in the country than, no offense to me, than maybe I was 40 years ago, let's put it that way. Sure. And it's tough times. I was just thinking about that today. You know, there's just so much going on right now in our country alone socially that affects your political beliefs, that I think it's sometimes it's a task. There's no question about it. But I think as long as you're respectful to each other and everybody understands that the common thing in this country is to be able to speak freely, yeah, then you can speak about what you want, when you want. But there's a time and a place for everything. And when we're playing football, it's time for us to play football.
Yeah, I was at your guys', one of the spring practices was on a day, was on a morning of the big, protest march that they had here. And I was looking on the field and trying to, I looked up later that day, kind of like the reported percent, total just raw numbers of, like African Americans on campus, and I was like, man, like a huge percentage of those guys are out there in shoulder pads and helmets in the morning and might have been marching in the afternoons. I was just kind of like, it was just kind of striking in terms of right. just percentages of, and like even like the reported Pacific Islanders were like, you guys have probably a third of the total Pacific Islanders maybe on your roster. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of striking to me in terms of the diversity of the team here versus maybe the rest of the school too.
Right, and I think the diversity of our team does help us individually, because it allows us to have a group of people that feel comfortable around each other, with each other. But I do think it's one of the things that people can learn from on any campus is the sport of football is 110 guys from all different backgrounds. And on Saturday nights, with one common cause, we go out and trust each other and go try to play a football game and win a football game together. And it's not just us, it's every football program in the country. Sure. Here it may stick out because of the facts that you just presented, but those, it's what it is, and this is still a really good place, but there's no place that's perfect, and every place needs to improve, and we definitely need to improve as a football program, let alone some of the things that go around campus right here too, that we are working on as a university.
Have recruits asked you about what's going on, anything?
Nope.
Not really.
I'm pretty open, though.
Yeah.
I mean, in the recruiting process, I'm pretty open. If somebody wants that, I've even brought it up before, that, the skin tone on our campus looks a lot more like me than it might look like some of the other young people that we're recruiting. And I think that it's an important thing to make sure that you're upfront about and honest about, because it doesn't do you any good to have somebody come here and be unhappy.
Or be surprised.
Yeah.
Right.
And it is. They all come on official visits and they see the campus and all those things, but it's like everybody across the country, an official visit, everybody's rolling out the red carpet, doing their deal, and it's just a lot of fun, and you're here for 48 hours, and then it's over. And then the reality is, you have to pick a place where you're going to live for the next 5 years of your life. And it was interesting, Gabe Umo, who I mentioned earlier, yeah. Tim Banducci, one of our great supporters, turned 70, and
I know Tim.
They had a party for him at the San Luis Country Club, and he had really grown close with Cole Stanford and Gabe Umo, and Gabe went to Morningside High School in Inglewood and learned how to drive a tractor from Tim and did some things with Tim that he probably never thought he would do. But Tim invited those guys to his birthday party, and I sat with Gabe, and Gabe goes, you look at all the things about Cal Poly, I wouldn't trade my experiences for everything. They said everything that I had, the adversity, if there was, the football, the education that I received, that all has made me become the man that I am today. And he's doing extremely well, bought his first house in Modesto. So those stories are stories that tell you and can tell recruits that this place is a great place. Yeah, like I said before, it's not perfect and we have some things we need to improve upon, but it does give you the opportunity to grow as a man. And I think that's one of the things you're supposed to do as a college student, let alone as a college student athlete, is continue to grow up to become the man you want to become. And Gabe is a living proof that great things can happen when you put your mind and stay positive about where you are, understanding that there are flaws. He's done a tremendous job.
Great. Talk about a few football things, back to some on the field stuff. I thought the defense, especially early last year, played really well at times, and maybe in larger spurts than they had in past years. Maybe a couple of halves down here and there in the first seven or eight games. Obviously the last couple games were kind of a wash for everybody on all sides of the ball. How do you kind of maintain maybe some momentum or re-grasp some of that momentum that I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, tell me, did you feel like the defense was a little better last year early on than they had been, and And what does that look like for this year? I know a lot of the focus gets put on the offense since both of those, since Jenkins and Prothrow were hurt last year.
You know, I just think that, you know, overall as a football team, we're inconsistent on both sides of the ball. I mean, there were games when the defense played really well and the offense struggled. Maybe that was because our opponent's defense. I mean, Southern Utah on defense and Weber State on defense and NAU, they're good. You know, and that's a fact. They're good. You got to be at your best to score points against them. You know, UC Davis, we came out and gave up 21 points in 8 minutes and then outscored them 27-7 or something like that the rest of the game or whatever it was. But the reality of the situation is there were spurts all year long between offense and defense and who was playing well and who wasn't. And we never really seemed to put it together for a complete game. But defensively, I do think we did some really good things against some quality teams, like I said, against Weber State, Southern Utah. Yeah. There were some games that we played extremely well. And I think to capture the energy that you play with and make sure that one side of the ball is never complacent with the fact that they play good and we still lost. That's a bad thing, you know. So it has to be the we part of it at all times. But there's going to be a lot of clips that we can use as good teaching clips on the defensive side of the ball from an effort standpoint all the way through. And, you know, I think we're in, you know, there's going to be some growth that needs to happen on defense, especially with the defensive line, because we are young. I do think we're talented, but we're extremely young. So I think that's going to be an area for us to concentrate on this fall.
I mean, going back to when I started paying attention and, you know, Kenny Jackson and, you know, Johnny Millard, and you just, I think of names of guys who are just beasts. Nick DeZubnar, obviously. You had Sullivan Gross and Lawrence. And, you know, you just have these names that just kind of pop into your head in terms of defensive guys who were, you know, dominant at their position. Who are your defensive leaders this season coming up? Who are you expecting to kind of, or are there still some kind of question marks there? Who are the guys that we're going to be hearing their name a lot?
Well, I do think there's a lot of positions that are
extremely competitive. Josh Latuya, I mean, like, there's been names.
There's a lot of positions that are extremely competitive still.
Okay.
But there are some guys. Jason Lee is going to be, even though he's only a third-year guy, it's going to be his third year starting, you know, and he needs to play like a third year starter. He's got the mentality.
At linebacker,
and he's got that attitude that I think really can be contagious to his teammates. I think Katu Humphrey has that ingredient as well. I think those two guys probably are going to have to be the energizers early on until some positions actually solidify themselves. I mean, inside linebacker, I mean, it could be any one of five guys. I mean, there's some young guys like Benton Will and Matt Shotwell and Joey Ruiz. And then you have Nick Navarro, who I think is going to be a really good player as well. So, you know, at the corner position, first time I could ever probably say that we have six guys that have started games. Now, who starts? Dominic Frash, Cam Dennis.
You might need all six the way they throw it around in this conference.
Yeah, and there will be times when there'll be four or five corners on the field maybe at one time. It's possible, depending on situations and all those things. So that's a good thing to have. I mean, to have the depth that maybe I think we have. And I think we have the same depth on the defensive line. The unfortunate part about it, they haven't started games. Right. And they're going to be playing against a team in North Dakota State where they're going to have to grow up and grow up quickly. But that's also maybe where some of the JC guys that we did sign, you know, Matt Wright from Hartnell Junior College, Johnny Watkins from Moore Park Junior College, I think that Ryan, those guys, you know, Kemp,
Griffin, Ryan Bain.
Yeah. Well, Ryan's been here.
Has he? Okay.
Yeah, Ryan's going to be in his third year. Griffin Kemp is a transfer from Utah through Mesa Junior College in Arizona. Those guys are going to have to be able to give us some downs. Doesn't mean they're going to start, but to give us some downs so that those younger guys don't have to play 65 or 70 plays because they won't be ready for that. But when you look at Siafonon Galoa, you look at Stanton Manu Manamuela, Pono Fayagi, Jojo Fallo, those young players, Miles Cecil, those guys are going to be really good players. I mean, really good in this league. Now, are they really good right now?
We'll see.
But I think that they're going to grow and grow quickly as the year progresses, too. So, you know, what you see in game one might not be what you see in game four, because I think there's going to be a growth process for that group of guys. I think they're talented.
You mentioned the defensive line being young. Sometimes a team's toughness, you can correct me if you don't think I'm right about this either, but sometimes a team's toughness can kind of be embodied in the O-line in terms of, you know, just kind of the way that they go about business as a unit. You guys have obviously lost a number of, you know, really good offensive linemen too over the past three seasons. What do you expect there this year, and how does that group
work? Well, all five guys have started games, and a lot of them have started multiple games, so the five starters, if you looked at it, like Sam Ogie started 9 games last year, Zach Shawcross started 9 games last year and won the year before. Harry Whitson has started 13 or 14 before he got hurt last year and missed the last 6 or 7 games. Tyler Wisenhunt has started about 15 games, 16 games, and Paul Trujillo started the last 4 or 5 last year. So those 5 guys have played a lot of college football against some good opponents. So, and I do think on this team, they are probably our toughest, most together group, if I had to say it. And it's because they've been with each other, and like you said, it's kind of the nature of the beast, especially with what we do on offense. And I do think that that group is going to have to be as hopefully as good as advertised as we go through the first 4 or 5 games of the season to allow maybe some of those defensive linemen to grow up. But those defensive linemen will also grow up a little bit playing against those guys for the next 2 or 3 weeks too. Right, so right. I think that's good. And I also think there are some good young offensive linemen that we have too. DJ Stuckey looks good. Wade Willett looks good. There's some good young offensive linemen in the group too. So I'm just expecting it to be a good competitive camp all the way around. But the O-line, there's no question, has to bring back that toughness mentality that they love 3 yards and they're going to grit their teeth and get first downs when we need them and touchdowns when we definitely need them.
So I've alluded to Khalil and Joe, both those guys, injured last season, both those guys not there during a lot of the run in terms of being able to be on the field. How old is Joe now? He's probably 20.
He's going to be 24.
He's going to be 24, yeah. So you're going to have a 24-year-old fullback.
He's having his third child as we speak.
Right now? Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Okay. I thought we were even for a minute. Now he's getting out ahead of me again. Khalil, obviously, has had to sit out a year as well. Mm-hmm. What do you see from those guys over the offseason? And I imagine those two guys are really at the center of your expectations for leadership, especially on the offensive end this year.
And, a lot of people asked last year about last year, too. And you don't just lose the physicality on your team when players get hurt. You lose their leadership because they're not there. They're there. They're at practice, but they're not there at games, away games. And you talk about 3 of our captains, in reality, were hurt last year. And so now leadership becomes a little bit of – it becomes splintered. There's no question about it. And I'm going to tell you right now, Khalil Jenkins has got all that you would want in his leadership abilities. And what he needs to do is he needs to live up to the things that he's established for himself as far as how he handles himself and handles situations, both as a man and as a player. And he has the physical talent. I mean, if you watched him play against Northern Iowa, if you watched him play against Idaho State, you got to see what he's capable of. Now he needs to be able to do those things consistently. And if he can do those things consistently, I think we're back to having, the Daniel Graves, Andre Brados, Chris Brown type of guys behind the quarterback, behind the center. And that guy gets the ball in every snap. And we're excited to see. He's had a great offseason, and I couldn't be happier with where he is right now. He's back down to about 210 pounds, which was a good weight to play that position with the punishment you have to take. Now it's his responsibility to make sure he learned what he did well last year and was able to learn from some of the things he didn't do so well. And one of those is taking care of the football and not trying to make a bad play worse. And I think if he can do those things, I think that with his athletic ability and his leadership abilities, we're better already. And then Joe
Prothero. When you say not make a bad play worse, like, hey, you're going to lose a yard, so lose a yard. Maybe don't try to gain 2.
You make a misread and you try to pitch it anyway, and you shouldn't have. You just duck up side, get us a yard.
Right.
Keep the football.
We'll play. Be okay with a yard.
Live another day.
That's what Dana was really good at.
Yeah. Live another day because they're going to, in this offense,
turn sideways, fall forward, feel okay about that.
Exactly. Because the misreads are happening. They do. The thing happens so quick and people don't get it, but the ball snapped and he has to make a decision. And sometimes he makes the wrong decision. Okay. What are you going to do to get us a yard or get us back to the line of scrimmage? Are you going to try to go make a great play out of a bad play? And then, no offense, Northern Iowa, he did it twice.
Yeah.
And that might, sure. those games could have been won.
Right.
So learning from those things that, it's okay to live another day, live another play, because the big plays will come if you give them the opportunity to come. If you try to create them yourself, then you're probably going in the wrong direction. I think he's learned that lesson, and hopefully that'll be something that shows as the year progresses this year. But he has all the talent that we want at that position. He needs now to go show it and play it and see his teammates see the consistency that he can have as a great football player.
You were going to talk about Joe. Sorry. Yeah.
No, I mean, what, I can't say enough about him. I mean, if you look back to last year, I mean, Jared Muhammad was a stud. I couldn't say enough about him, and we knew we had a good player in him.
One of the reasons I was really optimistic last year at the beginning of the year was because I said, you know, hey, Joe doesn't have to take as big a punishment, you know, overall. Like, Jared's right there. Mm-hmm. He's a guy who can fill in really well, you know, as a as a backup. He's probably overqualified.
Obviously, he did.
Yeah. Well, right. Would have been nice to have both of them, I'm sure.
He was
the
MVP. Right. He did all those things that you would ask him to do. So, I mean, you know, in hindsight for Jared, individually, it probably worked out pretty well. But he'd been the first guy to sit here and say he didn't like the way it happened. There's no question about it. And Joe's just different. Joe's a little bit more instinctive with the football maybe than Jared is as far as a running back. But, you know, Joe, a little bit towards the end of his third year and a little bit last year, he's got to take care of the football too. You know, the ball can't be on the ground, and he knows it. But if you want to see a guy who's is passionate about the game of football, that, you know, I mean, he lives it on a daily basis. And to see what he looks like now physically compared to what he looked like when he was a freshman, it's night and day. He's 224 pounds of solid muscle. He's probably a step faster. He's leaner. He's smarter. So what's the expectations? The expectations are huge. But I know our opponents will know that as well. So, and Joe's tough enough to do it, but I'm really excited to see him be healthy and get back out there. So as tough as it was to make the decision not to play him last year, and let the injury heal, I feel that probably in long term for Joe and for us this year was probably the right decision, especially the way Jared ended up playing.
All right, I'm gonna say a couple other names, and you can just tell me like the first thing that comes to mind, snap, whatever. Brock Mortensen.
Potential. Yeah. He can be as good as he wants to be. You know, and he's a multi-talented guy. He played
baseball this summer
and had a good year, and would like to play baseball. If he wants to really put his mind to football, I think he could be an all-conference running back and really do some special things. He's got a lot of talent.
Okay. Chubby Danu.
That's a tough one, because with him, the whole thing is how much he wants it. Does he want it as bad as we think want it for him? He has his athletic ability, his speed, and all the things that he can do, that they're things that we treasure as coaches. But then again, he's not very consistent in how he plays the game, how he prepares to play the game. He's got to become a tougher guy all the way around. But he's another guy that has some talent.
You see him walk in the room and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
He looks the part.
Right, for sure. Kyle Reed.
Probably just the opposite. I know how much he wants to be good. He's got great want to. And he is going to be a really good player. And, you know, the ironic thing for last, and this is nothing against Jake, because I think Jake did a great job last year too, is with the new rule, Kyle could have played four games last year and still could have counted as a redshirt. Any 4 weeks during this, any time.
If it was this year.
Yeah, with the new rule. And that.
But it wasn't an option last year. Mm-hmm. Right.
One play, and it was a year. Like Khalil, one game against Portland State 3 years ago, and that was a year. Right. Well, now you don't have to be hurt, nothing. You just can play in four games.
How are you guys going to – are you guys going to try to manage that a little bit? I mean, you guys are always a team that's redshirted freshmen, mm-hmm. like, pretty consistently. It seems like you could maybe save guys for a couple games here and there, maybe be real strategic about that.
We're going to – there'll be a lot of conversations about who we think is physically ready and who we think is mentally ready, and then – decide how much we want to play them. I mean, there are a couple guys. There's eight or nine guys we've already identified that we think hopefully will be good enough to give us some downs, and that helps our depth too, especially when you go through what we went through last year, knowing that if a guy plays in one game or two games because a guy's going to be out 2 to 3 weeks, you haven't lost his whole redshirt year. He just gets all that game experience plus four more years. Yeah. And that's a tremendous boost for us.
Yeah, that seems like something that a lot of those rules don't really do you guys any favors when they make rule changes. But that one does. That one really does. Even comparatively to the rest of the conference, I feel like you guys probably redshirt even freshmen who could have played. Like you said, like Kyle probably would have got some snaps last year.
Probably.
Right, yeah. Kitu.
Footballer. He's a football player. That guy eats, sleeps, football. I mean, the amount of time that he puts into the game allows him, maybe he's only 5'9", 190 pounds, but he plays like he looks like BJ Nard. And he eats up on Coach Stewart and Coach Stewart's coaching methods, teaching methods, technique methods, game preparation methods. If he doesn't get a chance to keep playing, that guy will be a great coach someday because he truly loves the game.
I think I have a couple more minutes here. I know you got. Sounds like people are coming in.
They have me. I don't know.
Okay, they have me. Okay, all right, good. Coaching changes this year. Mm-hmm. Coach Sadat's gone. I know. Can you talk about like what changes with the staff have happened?
Well, I just think every year we're gonna have changes, and that to me that's that's something I look forward to. I don't look forward to it. I shouldn't say that. I actually don't enjoy it at all. But I think it's a part of the game. And if it's good for a family member or good for a career to move on, then they should move. You know, and that's part of this business. And you lose guys and you have to replace guys. And I think that, once again, we were pretty fortunate. I mean, having Kenny McMillan been a student assistant here for 4 years made it really, 5 years made it really easy when Eric Coleman left, because that's kind of what he did. But he the inputting, the film study that he had to do and all the things that he had to do for us, he was more than ready for the position. And I think he's going to be actually a good young asset to the staff that helps us. Matt Tafoe, I couldn't be happier with somebody that brings the energy that he brings to the game of football as a coach. He is extremely energetic and loves the game. And, he coached for one of my best friends at the College of San Mateo for the last 4 years. He played at Iowa State. He's got everything you want in a coach as far as the energy. I think he needs the experience in college of the recruiting part of it, the evaluation part of it, all those things. But he's got a lot of want to, and he's got a lot of energy. I think he's going to be a great asset as well. And then I think anytime you get a guy, James Jones, who's been a coordinator at a couple of different places, to coach your defensive line, he's different than Payam. He's a little bit more. I'm not going to say the right word is intense. A different intensity, I guess, is a good word to use. And I think that as much as the players have bought into Payam, I think they're buying into James. So I think it's different, and I think sometimes different can be good too. So I'm excited to see how all the players buy into the new coaches, but I'm also excited about the guys I was able to keep and to see the progress of Jim Kraft in his second year as an offensive coordinator. I think is hugely important to the successes we have too.
Yeah, I know on defense you guys have kind of moved from four man to three man front. Is three man kind of the way that you guys are looking at things? How are you guys?
Yeah, we can, but the rush position that we did it with Josh 2 years ago, Josh and Tulane.
Right.
That can actually look at like you're a four down guy if you're just standing up. Right. So we still have the ability. What it does, it gives you the opportunity to be a little bit more multiple and take advantage maybe of some of the personnel you have. So the remains to be seen, I guess, would be my answer.
Kind of what that looks like.
We look like.
Yeah, sure.
You know, when we get into passing downs, there's definitely some guys that we want to get on some edges.
Sure, absolutely. So I talked about boomeranging, and I guess you're kind of hoping for a continued boomeranging this year. You're 7-4 and in the playoffs, and really 2 years ago, a reasonable expectation of at least competing for a Big Sky title, being in the mix through the last, month of the season, or, into the last month of the season.
I think we've been in the mix every year except last year.
Right. So is that a reasonable expectation this year for you guys to continue to be back there? I mean, coming off a 1-10 season, that's usually a really big ask.
That's probably is a big ask, but I don't think there's any other way to coach. We need to compete for a Big Sky championship, and that should be our goal. And I think I've mentioned a lot of the positions that I think are key to being able to do that. I think the schedule, I mean, in the first 6 weeks, I think we're playing four highly ranked teams.
Right.
So, we're going to find out real quick probably where we fit. But, going to the Big Sky conference this year and the media conference and all those things, I think a lot of people think 6-2 can win the league. You know, so if you can manage your way through a couple of away games and win your home games, which we have to get back to as well, is playing better at home. You can put yourself in the mix to where the last 2 or 3 weeks are meaningful, and that's ideally for any college football program. If you're playing meaningful games last 2 or 3 weeks, you're going to avoid maybe some of the things we went through the last 2 or 3 weeks last year.
Right. When was the last time you were at the Fargo Dome?
I've never been.
I've never been there.
I've landed in Fargo, but it was a land, gassed up, and left, so I didn't get an opportunity to stay there. But I've talked to a lot of people about it, and everybody says what a tremendous experience it is. So I'm excited that our players are going to have the experience. What they do with that remains to be seen. But I've heard Friday before the game, and the town is incredible as far as their feeling towards their team. It'll be sold out. It'll be loud as heck. They do some unique things prior to the game. So our players are going to get an experience, and hopefully that they're ready for it and they don't get all big-eyed and look around and forget to play football, because in that game, that they're obviously the best football team in the country at our level. I mean, they've beaten Iowa before when Iowa was going to the Rose Bowl. I mean, that they're that good, and they have 16 returning starters and a quarterback people are saying is as good as Carson Wentz. So we're going to find out real quick with the schedule that we have how it is, but Fargo should be an exciting trip, and 29 days from now, we'll see where we are, and we're going to line up, and let's go play football.
In 3 weeks, what will be the thing that you look for between now and then from your team that you go, okay, yeah, we are ready?
You know, I would say the number one thing is going to be the execution on offense and some of the things I talked about, the toughness of the offensive line, and you hit on the ability to block the perimeter a little bit tougher and a little bit better maybe than we have in the last couple of years, and to take care of the football and make good decisions with the football. That on offense, that really is it in a nutshell. On the defensive side of the ball, I think some of the thing is to play with a consistent enthusiasm and a daily bit. If you're going to be great on defense, you got to be great on defensive practice. You have to truly love the game. You're not running into the end zone and scoring 60-yard touchdowns. You're playing football and banging people around and doing those things. So creating a mentality on the defensive side of the ball that allows us to be a mature defense, even though we're young, in the next 3 weeks is going to be extremely important, and establishing the leadership part of it on the defensive side of the ball. I think the kicking game with Alex Vega and Casey Sublette, I think we're as good as we probably can be in the kicking game, but the new rule on the kickoff is going to be an interesting rule for everybody, as to determine how you want to field kicks and how you want to kick the ball. Because there may be teams that you think that don't look like they're very good at returning. If you kick the ball on the ground, you have to return it. If you kick the ball in the air, you can fair catch it and get it on the 25. So there's some decisions to be made in the kicking game, and it's going to have an impact on the game. So I'll be interested to see how we do and how we look as a special teams unit. But I know Coach Frigno's a lot more excited this year with the depth that we have, yeah, and his opportunity to hopefully have a better grasp on what we're doing.
Yeah, special team is always interesting. After last year, feeling like additional pressure? I mean, obviously coming off of 1-10 years, you know, not ideal.
Yeah, I don't think, you know, I mean, if you want to look at it that way, you're not going to be yourself. You know, I mean, I have to be who I am and what I believe in as a head coach, and this year is not about last year. I mean, people can say it is. The reality is this is about these guys. You know, that opportunity, yeah, I wasn't happy. It was no fun to go through and all those great things. But if I spend too much time now thinking about that, we had our time to think about that. It's over. And it's time to move forward with this team and create the attitude that we want to have with this team. And hopefully overall, like I said before, be the team, the total team that we want to be. And that includes coaches and players. And I think that everybody's got great buy-in now. And it's our job to build on it.
Thanks, Tim.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Streetlights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up.